Hello, my name is Demetrius. This is Jason.
Hello.
This is Michelle.
Hello.
And this is Spaces Podcast. Thank you for coming back, everyone. Thank you for listening. Today we are talking about amusement parks. So decided that we should kind of veer away. We've had some heavy topics lately, Jason and Michelle now on board. Michelle, this is your first full actual episode.
It is.
How are you?
Hopefully I add some value.
How are you feeling about it? About doing this now?
I feel great.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we wanted to kind of change it up a little bit. It's summer. We're in the full swing of summer. So we'll talk a little bit about amusement parks. But before we jump into that, I want to go around the room and catch up. Jason, how's your week been?
Good. I think the biggest things that we passed on probably was the holidays, right?
Yeah.
So we didn't really get to touch on that, but, 4th of July is one of my two favorite holidays of the year.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, everybody likes the normal ones, but Easter and 4th of July are actually my two favorites.
Interesting.
So Easter, because we need more church, if you follow up on our last episode, and that's the day we should celebrate. But but 4th of July is probably like a very close second.
Because you get to blow up stuff?
Yeah, I get to blow up stuff. We did a lot of that. But the other reason, honestly...
So Jason is conservative, if you haven't been able to pick up on it.
Potentially. I don't want to alienate anybody, so I'm going to fire right down the middle. I do own guns, though. But the thing that I love about it, if you look at those two holidays, there's nothing behind it. It's just people getting together and having a good time. It's usually family and friends. Food, barbecue, blow up stuff,
yeah,
you know, whatever the deal is. But there's no like gifts and all those types of things. It's not formal, you know. But it's 4th of July. We live in Orange. Fireworks aren't legal,
mm-hmm.
but in Santa Ana they are legal,
mm-hmm.
and we have like four unincorporated Santa Ana streets around us. It's a war zone.
Yeah,
it is so cool. Yeah. I mean, like we have so much fun. Both sides of our family come over. And, you know, we buy the big old pack of fireworks and blow stuff up. And I was teaching my son this year. And my brother's a firefighter, so we're good. We're covered. He's usually there.
Yeah.
But then our neighbors, like, go to Arizona and Nevada.
And don't you have, like, on your block, there's, like, cops and firefighters
we've got retired police chiefs. We've got a retired sheriff. I don't know what the head of sheriffs are. I don't know if that's a sheriff chief. You know what I mean? I don't know. No disrespect.
Yeah.
I've got firefighters. And then at the end of our cul-de-sac, it's rad, is the international president for Soldiers for Christ.
Okay.
So we do a lot of really cool stuff on our street. It's pretty safe. It's pretty sane. But like cops will show up and some of the guys will flash about it. They'll sit and watch. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah.
The neighbors. So one of the guys, we call him Uncle Kev. Uncle Kev on our street. He's like crazy... Uncle Kev guy, and he just lights about 10 grand worth of stuff off, and then his backyard neighbor a couple houses removed, if you will, he got jealous of it apparently years ago, so he goes and buys. So they like just have this like whose finale is better. It's a legit Disneyland style firework display. I mean, it's out of control. And then going back to like the economy's good because they're blowing stuff up everywhere right now. So anyway, I thought it was pretty cool, but so I love that one.
So I wanted to jump in on something you said about the economy doing so well.
Yeah.
This isn't my update, but just a thing that I've noticed is I don't know how many of my friends have been changing jobs.
Dude.
Some are leaving to
Carousel's retarded
to
right now.
Pursue house flipping now. So it's crazy that that's when you know the economy is kind of getting towards its peak. Is when the house flipping
and it
starts
is a
up again.
Volatile time to be flipping houses too.
Yeah,
it's not the best of ideas.
Yeah,
it goes back to the same thing I talked about. Like I think when we did this a while ago, it's like all of a sudden all these general contractors are popping up again.
Yep,
not good.
Yeah,
I mean like not good.
Yeah. But Michelle, How has your week and weekend been?
Good. All good. So it was my birthday a couple of weeks ago. Okay. So I'm just settling in to my mid-30s. Yes, thank you. I've exited the early 30s. I find that I'm now, I like to identify now as a mid-30-year-old.
You seem much more mature.
Certain responsibilities and challenges with that. No,
just wait till you get to my age. Super mature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. But no, all is good. You know, it was such a funny time. The end of June was PCBC, which is the Pacific Coast Builders Conference.
Oh, that's right.
Which is a great networking opportunity / boondoggle. It's just a lot of events and parties and reconnecting with colleagues. And there's value to that, but it also is an exhaustive 2 or 3 or 4 days, depending on how you kind of line out your schedule. And then the week after that was 4th of July, and that was kind of a funny week because the 4th was literally in the middle of the week. So Tuesday felt like a Friday, and then you kind of relaunched on Thursday, but that was my birthday, and then people really weren't back in the office. And so what's exciting is a lot of there was a kind of a slowdown prior to July, and now we're in July and things are kind of chugging along and it's all good.
That was like the most unproductive week ever.
Yeah.
I was so frustrated.
You know what's funny is I actually was super productive because I didn't have all the distractions.
I didn't have
emails coming through and phone calls. I sort of was able to just focus and do deep work.
I totally agree. Yeah. I was super productive, but I'm saying like so many people were like not productive because it was almost like, I don't want to do anything on Monday because I'm really going to be done after Tuesday.
Correct.
Tuesday, they're like already checked out. Thursday, they're still hungover, and Friday, it's like, hey, now it's Friday.
I actually was thinking about just like as a rule, like what if in the world you just worked Mondays and Tuesdays, Wednesdays was a day off, and then you worked again Thursday and Friday.
Not good.
No, see, I kind of think that we would be more productive because you have 2 days to get done. So are we allowed to cuss on here?
Yeah, you can cuss. I do it all the time.
Okay, perfect.
Demetrius might bleep me out. I can't remember.
We try not to.
It's bullshit, Demetrius.
my freaking ears!
I will be bleeping all of this.
but see, here's the funny thing. So you recently hired a couple individuals. So now how many are you managing?
I'm managing 2 people, but it is a group effort because these 2 people are working with a team.
Then your opinion of that will change. Because once you start like managing groups of people, you can really get like a median on productivity and what it looks like on the whole. And when you have those short day like time spans, it's not nearly what it would be.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I think they mentioned that. And I think that there's some mention of something like that in a 4-hour work week. But yeah, I don't know.
It's kind of like right before I'm about to go on a vacation or if I know I'm going to be out of the office.
Yeah.
It's the whole, it's like the, when you're, the busier you are, the more productive you are.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
When you have less
I agree with that.
Tasks or things to do, you tend to.
You accomplish as much as you have set before you.
Correct.
Yeah.
You sort of prolong the task at hand. So.
That'll be interesting to find out.
Yeah.
I disagree with you.
So, of course you do.
So
love you, hate you.
So I've had my first kind of hiccup financially with the business. This is a reminder to the business owners to always stay on top of your clients about
billing. Dude, that's the hardest thing.
Yep. So I think, you know, in the middle of it you get so kind of wrapped up in getting work done, and you send out an invoice and you assume that they received it, you have to follow
Time out. They received it.
Yeah.
Okay. They received it. They're just not paying it.
Well, they receive it, but you know, everybody right now, everyone's slammed. So I'm assuming it goes in one email and you know, you're jumping on something else and just miss it.
Sure.
So make sure to stay on top. I've started a new thing because, you know, we're all digital now. So I got a timestamp on my invoices and then I got to set a reminder to, you know, follow up and another timestamp once I receive approval via email or whatever. So have this whole process that I'm doing now, but stay on top of your invoices.
Yeah, collecting funds is like the hardest thing of for one, starting a business.
Yeah.
And getting it running. It's you'll do well in getting the work. It's getting people to pay it. Not that they won't pay it.
Yeah.
But like pay it expediently.
Yeah.
It's just, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Yep. And then the one other thing I wanted to leave as an update. So my wife and I use hotels.com.
Okay.
And I don't know if you guys have used it, but after so many use or bookings, you get a free night, or not a free night. You get like a credit, okay. And then it adds up after 10. You get a free night.
Okay.
So we had this email that said that we hadn't booked a night somewhere in almost a year, and that threshold was coming up. And once you hit that marker, you lose all the credits that you've accumulated. So we're like, oh crap, we gotta use this to try and retain our credits. So we ended up staying at the hotel like right here around the corner,
okay,
for one night just to save our credits. That's funny. Which is like the weirdest experience. Yeah. I like to avoid parking fees. We dropped off our stuff and then I drove my car back here to the apartment.
Like hoofed it over.
Yeah, and then walked back.
Did you pay for the hotel night or was it?
Yeah. Yeah, so you pay for the hotel night.
Just to maintain these credits?
Well, it could be worth it if you think about it.
Maybe. So this reminds me of my JetBlue story, which I can share.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so we each got a $100 credit for a flight that actually cost less than $100 because JetBlue had delayed our flight by 4 hours. And I, to be honest, actually cannot remember where we were flying home from. But it was a short flight. We paid less than $100 for the flight. And yet, because of JetBlue's mishap, we each received a $100 credit. Well, there's a one-year expiration date on that credit. So after 1 year, you cannot use the credit.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept trying to find a flight. You know, we travel quite a bit. So we kept trying to use this credit, trying to use a JetBlue flight, but they weren't going to the place we wanted to go or they wasn't the right flight time. And for whatever reason, we just were never able to
use this. Yeah, because where you guys go, you take freaking biplanes or like prop planes sometimes.
So leading
hitting
up
a freaking runway of dirt where they're moving the cows or whatever.
So, you know? So leading up to this expiration, we're like frantically trying to find a place that we can just do a long weekend and take advantage of this credit. We ultimately let the credit pass because what we figured is we can use this $100 credit, but in the process, we're going to spend $3,000 for a long weekend.
Yeah.
So
we ran the math really quick, and each time that we stayed was, you know, $150. So the math worked out to where if we did it right now, although it feels like you're kind of losing money, ultimately we sort of saved.
The only thing that I saw about hotels.com, like, cause we don't stay that many places, but each couple weeks ago, I think it was, we went away for our wedding anniversary and my wife's birthday are the same day.
Yeah.
So every year we go away for a weekend, at least just her and I, and, you know, ditch the kids with somebody. And, anytime I've ever looked on hotels.com for where we were staying, it wasn't like a deal. Mm-hmm. Like usually the website itself for that location would have a better deal or whatever it is if you book direct.
Yeah.
So I've never really used one of those sites.
Yeah.
But I was disappointed because everybody always talks cool about it. Like you get these great deals and I'm like, I'm getting a better deal through
there. The individual deals aren't that great. You can usually get it cheaper straight through. But the thing that is the savings is once it adds up to that free night.
That makes sense.
So I don't know. We're giving it a shot. So we'll jump into the conversation today. Again, we're talking about amusement parks, which design-wise are largely more of a planning and engineering exercise. But from an architectural perspective, I always thought it was pretty cool the way that you can create these kind of interesting environments in those different spaces where you're waiting in line or the kind of different worlds that you create throughout the theme park. But to understand more about amusement parks, you have to go back in time.
Hi, Demetrius here. As you may know, Spaces is part of Gable Media, the next evolution of interactive media and resources for the AEC community and beyond. You may have heard me previously mention the development of a brand new membership platform for Gable Media. Well, it's finally here. You can now sign up to be a member at gablemedia.com/members. And as your first major perk, you gain exclusive access to our continuing education program, including AIA credit-worthy courses. That's right. Gable Media is now an official AIA CES provider, and you can get credit for listening to Select Spaces episodes. The days of scouring the internet for online courses and running around town for credit-worthy presentations are over. I've tried out our program, and it is the most convenient way to get your continuing education credits. Now, this membership tier will be limited, so make sure to go to gablemedia.com/members or just click the link in the show notes to gain access today.
Ancient Rome. The Gardens of Sallust, referred to as a pleasure garden, was developed as a private garden. It contained many pavilions, a temple to Venus, and sculptures. The gardens were acquired by the Roman Emperor Tiberius to open for public use. In 1583, a natural spring in a large forest park of Denmark was believed to have curative properties. It attracted large crowds, entertainers, and innkeepers. The site, known as Bakken, further developed over time and is now considered the world's first amusement park. By the 18th century, traveling or periodic fairs, pleasure gardens, and exhibitions such as world's fairs became public entertainment for the masses. Pleasure gardens, a more romantic setting, had tightrope walkers, hot air balloon ascents, concerts, and fireworks. Fairs were places where the public could view freak shows, acrobatics, conjuring and juggling, take part in competitions, and walk through menageries. The World's Fairs began in 1851 with the construction of the Crystal Palace in London, England. The purpose was to celebrate the industrial achievement around the world. The World's Columbian Exposition of 1893 in Chicago, Illinois, set out to amaze visitors with a blaze of lights, an amusement concession area known as the Midway, and the first steel Ferris wheel. This period was an era of rapid economic growth where many Americans had more disposable income. Amusement parks capitalized on the opportunity opening across the United States and Canada. A need for more exciting entertainment led to the development of the roller coaster. Early designs featured sleds or wheeled carts that were sent down hills of snow reinforced by wooden supports. At the same time, popularity of waterside parks and piers followed. Blackpool Beach in England, Steel Pier in Atlantic City, New Jersey, and Coney Island in New York.
It's almost like a carnival. You know, there's people on the boardwalk, you know, everybody's walking, there's people dancing, there's musicians, there's puppet shows, there's games, there's rides, it's, you know, an amusement park and a beach, and but it has an urban flavor to it. So it's just a little different. It's not your usual state fair.
As a kid, when I was a teenager, we would come here, you know, the whole summer, stay at Bay 14, and we'd eat before we get on the train to go home. I lived in Brooklyn at the time. They used to have an Orangeade at that time for a nickel. The Frankfurters were, I think, 10 cents. That I was lucky then. I didn't have to pay.
After the war changed. After the Second World War, I'd say Coney Island changed. I personally feel. Prior to the World War, Coney Island was the thing. Coney Island was it, because you can get here for 5 cents from all over, from Queens, from Manhattan, from the Bronx, all over.
The Great Depression of the 1930s, World War II during the 40s, and a series of social changes in the 1950s, such as an exodus from urban to suburban areas, subsequent urban decay and increase in crime, and the popularity of television all led to a decline in the amusement park industry. Unexpectedly, the creator of a cartoon mouse who had entertained Americans since the 1920s reignited interest. Walt Disney aimed to create a theme park that captured the magic of the Disney film experience, which ultimately initiated the niche of theme parks. SeaWorld, Legoland, Knott's Berry Farm, and Universal Studios, for example. With an innovative financing and marketing approach, Disney obtained funding for Disneyland Project from the ABC network by agreeing to produce a weekly television show that followed its development. Ready or not, the park opened in 1955, as many Americans watched the grand opening on record-breaking live broadcasts. The park was a success and drew 1 million visitors during its first 10 weeks, despite operational challenges on day one, where rides broke down because of electric overload, restaurants ran out of food and drinks, and women's high-heel shoes sank into fresh asphalt. In 1961, Six Flags Over Texas opened in Arlington, Texas. Originally, the Texas history-themed Six Flags referred to the flags of the six different nations that have governed Texas: Spain, France, Mexico, the Republic of Texas, the Confederate States of America, and the United States. The park featured theme rides, but over time, many were replaced with roller coasters. By this time, technology evolved to feature railroad track using wheeled cars that were securely locked to the track. Newer innovations emerged in the early 20th century with side friction and under friction technologies to allow for greater speeds and sharper turns. By the mid to late 20th century, these elements intensified with the introduction of steel roller coaster designs and the ability for them to invert riders. The water theme park was another concept that followed Disneyland's lead. The first opened in Newberry Springs, California in 1962, but it wasn't until the late 70s that the concept took hold. While Wet n Wild in Orlando was the first premier water park in the US in 1977, Action Park was the park that lived in infamy. Baby, let me take you where the action's hot.
You'd see like a kid in the summer covered in friction burns, and you'd just be like, oh, how was Action Park?
Accident Park.
Part of the fun was actually surviving the day.
Traction Park.
The slides were higher, the rides were faster.
Class Action Park.
We got a reputation as being the wildest amusement park in the world.
It's been shut for almost 20 years, and I think no amusement park has caught up to its death toll yet.
If you told somebody about this, it sounds like you're making stuff up. The action never stopped
at Action Park. Opened in Vernon, New Jersey in 1978, its popularity went hand in hand with the reputation for poorly designed rides, undertrained, underage staff, intoxicated guests and staff, and consequently poor safety record. At least six people are known to have died as a result of mishaps on rides at the park. Personal injury lawsuits led to the closure of more and more rides and eventually the entire park in 1996. From a simple garden getaway to roller coasters that accelerate to 149 miles per hour in just 4.5 seconds, amusement parks have come a long way. These parks have become a source of fantasy, an escape from real life. Parkgoers continue to look for more, and it appears digital technology will be the next innovation to provide the excitement and escape that they seek. So, what are your thoughts on that, that little brief history? Jason, you were kind of enjoying Action Parks.
Yeah, the funny part was it was reminding me there was a death in an amusement park in the last few months. I can't remember where it was at, but they had to shut it down because somebody hit like a screen. It's a huge slide. It was a water slide, huge slide, and somebody hit like the screen above it. I can't remember which one. It might have been in Texas again.
Huh?
I don't remember. But you know, I've been to a lot of different amusement parks. And when we originally started talking about the topic, I didn't even think about the water parks.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been to plenty of those too, which are fun and not very sanitary, but that's the one thing I think about with water parks.
Yeah.
But, that's crazy. I mean, the amount of death tolls that they said they had there.
Yeah.
That's pretty nuts, but not surprising.
The amusement park is kind of a broad term. So it has all of the, you know, normal parks that have random rides and different things like that. And then you have the theme park, which is like Disneyland, Legoland, all of those. And then you got the water park, which still falls under that amusement park.
Because we've done, as a family, well,
at least in my time, and then with some of the family, we've done Legoland. We did Legoland quite a bit about a year ago, only because we had a bunch of hockey, like youth hockey games in Carlsbad.
Yeah.
So it was right there, and they had great deals on an annual park. It was nice. It's small.
Yeah.
It's very small, but it was actually nice, and it was almost as clean as Disneyland, which to me is like the pinnacle. I mean, that place is spotless.
So the funny thing about Legoland, I for the longest time thought the Legoland here, I thought that was like the first Legoland ever, but there's actually where the original Lego store is. Was it Denmark, I believe?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where they started the first one. I was shocked to find that out.
So speaking of Denmark, I think you mentioned it in the history overview.
Yeah.
It was Tivoli Gardens. Did you mention it? Maybe not?
I can't remember.
Okay. But a lot of the history that you touched on reminds me of Tivoli, and it's that old world feeling and cotton candy and shows. And yeah, you have some wooden coasters, but it's not to the level that it would be today if you were to go to Magic Mountain, Six Flags Magic Mountain, for example. But good stuff.
Yeah. When was the last time you were at an amusement park, Michelle?
Honestly, it's been a while. It's been an unusually long time.
Yeah.
There hasn't really been a good reason to go, just where I am in terms of my life stage. I don't have kids yet, and so we haven't had a good excuse. But I would say you might be able to include the zoo as an amusement park, right?
Yeah, zoos, I guess they would consider it a theme park. Yeah, technically.
Zoos these days, right? So the zoos these days oftentimes add amusement to it in terms of rides and certainly the entertainment component that you would see in a typical amusement park.
Yeah, like SeaWorld.
I was thinking SeaWorld
was originally, I guess you could originally call it a an aquarium type place to some extent, but they're starting to scale back because of the Blackfish
documentary. Great documentary. I don't know if it's right or wrong or whatever. I'm just saying it was a great documentary.
SeaWorld has worked really hard since that documentary to, I guess, reevaluate some of the choices that they've made. I think they've done a pretty decent job at sort of rebranding and refocusing what they're about and what they ought to be about.
So I think they are introducing roller coasters now as well.
It's like a Manta something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're shifting gears there. Rightly so.
Well, I was
definitely.
Say,
definitely rightly so.
I was going to say, we have... annual pass holders to Disneyland. My wife and the kids go pretty frequently, actually. Thank gosh, because the passes are getting more and more expensive, like every month it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
But we do a lot of Disneyland. I haven't been to Knott's in a while. I'd like to go to Knott's.
Oh, yeah.
Like I said, we did Legoland, we do SeaWorld, and then my favorite, which I haven't gone with the family, is Magic Mountain.
So. Yeah, so we had the Universal Studios pass for like 2 years, I think. So we did that all I don't know, as much as we could, probably 4 or 5 times a
year. City Walk's pretty cool too.
Yeah, everything's so expensive there.
Yeah.
I think just because of the price of the rental there.
The real estate.
Yeah, the real estate is so expensive. I don't know. It just, I'd rather bring food or eat right before and wait till afterwards.
I actually forgot all about Universal Studios.
But you can't pass on the Cinnabon on the way out. That's the one thing. And they always get you because it's the last shop on your way to the parking garage.
Nah, dude, Disneyland. I buy that whole sourdough Mickey head.
I haven't seen that.
Because they have that boudin sourdough bread like factory there at California Adventure. Right?
Okay.
It's the two parks, right? You got Disneyland, you got California Adventure. I buy one every time, and I probably eat 2/3 of it myself. Like, so good.
Well, if we're going to talk about food, I remember as a kid, the funnel cake at Magic Mountain.
Oh, yeah.
The funnel cake was where it was at. And I, like, a funnel cake, where else do you get a funnel cake?
Knott's Berry Farm. That's why I was thinking, Knott's Berry Farm, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Knott's...
Fried chicken, Knott's Berry Farm.
Knott's was more known for the funnel cake.
Yeah.
Then Magic Mountain.
Yeah, I don't remember even. I don't even remember that.
I think maybe I grew up in Ventura County, which is
it's different.
A hop, skip, and a jump away from Magic Mountain.
Yeah.
Whereas coming to Orange County was sort of an event. If we were going to go to Disneyland or we're going to go to Knott's, it was kind of a bigger to do than ditching school for a day.
Yeah.
With parental supervision to Six Flags.
Yeah. So to go back to that point about the cost of the real estate. So if you were, let's say you were developing your own amusement park, what would you guess? So they have kind of a rule of thumb that developers should anticipate on investing for their first. And the way that they do it is investing per expected first year guess.
Wait, say again, investing per?
An amount per expected first year guess. So this is what they would anticipate basically investing into their land cost or the whole development costs.
Per, you're saying per guest?
Yeah. Per anticipated guest.
500. No, it can't be. 500 bucks?
No, no, no. It's not that high. So it's $100 per anticipated guest in 1 year. So for example, the average attendance of the top 25 theme parks or amusement parks in the world were around 9 million attendees per year. So if you looked at that development cost, your assumption would be $900 million invested to develop that park. Okay. So,
Jeez.
Yeah.
It's a big number.
Yeah, and it's scaled significantly over the years. In the 1950s, the rule of thumb, or the average, was $36.25.
Okay, wow.
And right now, or in the 2000s, the average was above what that rule of thumb is. It's $212.43. So these things can get super expensive, obviously. Like the mega theme parks like Disneyland, Universal Studios, those can cost $2 billion to $4 billion for the development.
I don't doubt it.
And I don't know. The thing that I was struggling with is, or thinking about, is where do you even find that much land anymore?
Oh, yeah.
Michelle, you would have, you know, some thoughts to that of acquiring that much land. That would be...
I don't think it exists. I mean, if you really think about it, like, that'd be a whole lot of tear down.
I mean, kind of absorb.
I mean, because you even look at, like, Disneyland here in Anaheim.
Yeah.
I mean, they basically just wait for somebody to want to put something up for sale and then buy it.
Yeah. And then the competition as well. You know, you got to compete with Disneyland, Magic Mountain.
Oh, dude. It's over.
Well, but, I think of it, it's you're really repurposing is what you're doing. You're not necessarily going out and identifying raw infill property to put a 300 or 400 acre amusement park on it. So what I found interesting going back to the action park is that the park closed in 1996, right? So in 1998, IntraWest, which is a resort developer, purchased the majority of that ski area that that action park was built on top of. And then did a massive overhaul and got rid of all the attractions that were deemed inappropriate or had
or life-threatening.
Terminated lives.
Or thrilling.
We laugh about it, but they got rid of those.
Yeah.
And they actually reopened a water park that is called Mountain Creek Water Park.
Huh.
And so to your question about where do you find that land, I think you find it by looking for property that isn't going to be that again. So I think a good example would be, you know, movie drive-ins, right? So the drive-in theaters is dead, unfortunately, that people don't do that anymore, at least not in California. Maybe, you know, so there's probably some still Midwest towns that do that, and good for them, they should.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, finding property like that is just vacant, massive land areas.
Yeah.
One that did all right was, is it Great Wolf Lodge?
Oh, yeah.
That's here. So it's kind of a different take, right? It's like a hotel, and then you've got like an indoor water park. My kids and them have been, I have not personally been there, but it's an indoor water park. So it's got to be of good size. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I would imagine.
Yeah.
A little bit of a different spin.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually kind of a interesting concept. The thing I hate about that place, I've only been once, but you go in and it's extremely muggy, like
humid,
humid
water inside, right?
Weird smelling. I can't get on board with the indoor pools. It never is a good environment when you walk into those things.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on that.
But to your point, Michelle, about the repurposing, I think Disneyland and Universal are kind of doing that. They're basically expanding into adjacent areas, buying adjacent land and
definitely
and converting it into.
Yeah, you look at what Disneyland is doing in Anaheim, California, and a lot of their expansion has been done on what has historically been surface parking lots.
Correct.
And so they're finding ways to create more efficient parking, or they're counting on public transit or ride sharing now. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's a very recent trend.
Yeah.
But they're finding ways to consolidate parking and make parking go vertical, so that they can utilize what typically was just a sea of surface parking lots.
That's funny. I remember going to Disneyland and it was that massive lot, just a flat lot,
correct,
and you would park and walk all the way up. And I didn't even think about it till you said that, but it's pretty much all gone.
The parking structures they've built there, I mean, are just gigantic.
Yeah.
I mean, well thought out, well executed, but just gigantic.
Yeah.
It's pretty unreal.
So developing an amusement park, I thought this was extremely short. I can't fathom it being this quick, but they estimate 3-year turnaround for the development of an amusement park. And they average about 300 acres.
For an entire amusement park?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, that's what.
No way. I mean, I think it's kind of hard to even fathom. I would say for them to add on sections.
Mm-hmm.
So take Disneyland right now, and the only as we're doing this, semi local centric, right? But I think they're doing Star Wars Land or something of that effect, and that's taking them a couple and a half years.
Yeah.
To do that, so I get a land or a section being that, but if you were to try to do ground up an entire, there's no way it's 3 years. No way.
Yeah.
There's no way. I mean, apartment complexes take how long?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? A year and a half, 2 years? There's no way you're going through. Yeah. There's no way you're doing a thing. So whoever said that one, I got to challenge a little bit.
Yeah. Because the assembly of or construction of a roller coaster is about what they've said is about a year and a half.
Right.
So, I mean, if you are flying and you have, everybody has their section dialed in and, no hiccups at all. Maybe.
Because I think if you're tying into something, but to take a completely not bare or even to have to reconstruct an area of land to create an entire amusement park.
Yeah.
All the infrastructure that has to go in for that. There's no, and plus then constructing rides, there's no way that's 3 years.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. So the, so kind of jumping back to what we were talking about with the acquiring land and whatnot, China actually has a freeze on amusement parks right now. And there's a couple of reasons why they've done it. One is the debt, because so many businesses are, just jumping into new projects and racking up all this debt. And the second, which I found interesting, is people are disguising housing and office projects as theme parks. I'm not quite sure how you do that.
What kind of extracurricular activities are we talking about? I could understand something being something land being potentially thrilling, but I don't know about it being, it could be a different kind of ride.
It's, the way that it's hard to kind of find details on it, but what I imagine is, all the hotels and all the other stuff that you have to support a theme park.
Company,
them doing something like that and then just, putting very minimal effort into the actual park with the intention of basically shutting that part of it down at some point in the near future.
That sounds kind of weird.
Yeah, but I thought it was really interesting. And then some other kind of trends going forward. Technology. Have you noticed any advancements since you guys go? You got the whole family. Have you guys noticed anything, Jason?
Yeah,
I think the technological advancements are difficult to see if they are there.
Okay.
I mean, there's always updates to rides.
So, Disneyland, when was the last time you went there?
Probably a couple months ago.
Because that one had one of the coolest things that I saw. I don't know if you guys had this, but apparently they have a wristband, kind of a personalized wristband.
Okay.
And this may be Disney World, which you might not have seen that one yet.
No.
So they have a personalized wristband. So as you're walking around the park, it documents all your fast pass times.
Sure.
You can pay with it.
Sure.
And then even to the point of when you get on a ride, it engages with the ride to make a more personalized experience. Huh. So like if you have a favorite character, that character will pop up more or something. Gotcha. Something along those lines.
I haven't seen that at Disneyland, so maybe that's a Disney World thing then.
Yeah. Which I thought was really cool because I guess kind of one of the trends now is that they're, it's a mass entertainment site, but they're trying to personalize it as much as possible, which is an interesting dichotomy when you have
a lot of people to try and personalize.
Yeah.
Well, I think of like technological advances. I think one of the coolest things that I saw, and I am not a Harry Potter fan, let me lead with that.
Yeah.
But I found myself at Universal Studios about a year ago with all of my cousins, my first cousins, who all have young kids. And so we spent a fair amount of time in, is it called Harry Potter World? Or I don't know what the land is called at Universal. Again, not a Harry Potter fan.
The Wizarding, my wife's going to get mad at me.
It'll come to us.
The Wizarding World of Harry Potter.
Perfect. I think is what it's called. Yeah, so we were there, and one of the technological advances that I just thought was so cool was this wand concept where you purchase a wand, right? And I think they go for a pretty penny. They're like $40 or $60, right? And again, you're handing it to your three-year-old.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the wand, you go around to different places within different shops, and you make, is it wishes with your wand, or you do commands? Again, I'm not a Harry Potter. I'm so butchering this, but just the interaction with a wand that you have purchased, spells. Okay, so an interaction that with the wand that you as a guest have purchased, and then to be able to go around and interact, not in a ride, not in a formal setting, just sort of on your own time and finding these spots within the Wizarding World of Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I just thought it was really, really neat, and just such an interactive way to use technology, kind of in a different way than we're talking about with the wristband.
Yeah. And then the other thing we didn't even mention, going back to, I think it was like the late 80s with at Disneyland, Michael Jackson's Captain EO movie. 3D has made a huge comeback, and it seems like every single ride at Universal... Universal Studios has gone down the route of 3D, and I think a few other theme parks are starting to include it as well. But
or even going back in time to, was it the late 90s when FastPass was introduced at Disneyland?
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, that time when I was frequenting Disneyland more often, you know, that was a really exciting technological advancement that, my gosh, you didn't have to wait in line for an hour and 20 minutes any longer for the log ride. Like you could get your fast pass, go have a bite to eat, and then come back and use your time more efficiently.
So on that note of the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, it's like the longest title ever. They're also trying to do kind of other interactive things. I don't know if you got a chance to go, Michelle, if you got a chance to go into the, what is it called? The Ollivander's Wand Shop. Does that sound familiar?
It does. I stood outside. Okay. So because I'm not a fan of Harry Potter, I was really just enjoying their
Butterbeer?
Butterbeer, yes. So, and witnessing all of the commotion around me.
Yeah. Side note, I know how to make an alcoholic butterbeer.
Which, I mean, why aren't we drinking them right now? I'm kind of disappointed.
Lost me entirely. I could care less about Harry Potter or beer for that matter.
It's beer. It's non-alcoholic. Butterbeer is non-alcoholic.
That also sounds like a horrible idea because
you
I understand
will
most of
love it.
It's like a cream soda kind of flavor. but I'm gonna make some for one of our episodes. We'll try it out.
Don't touch me with your wand or whatever else. I just want to make very clear.
Oh, jeez. So back to my original point. They're on the interactive side. They're trying to do like the escape room type of feel. So that wand shop thing is similar in that you go into this room. They have actors that go through this whole ceremony of selecting a wand and engage with, you know, a room of 10 to 15 people or something like that. So again, just trying to personalize things and break up the mass, and then energy efficiency. Sure. And then the last thing, and then we'll get to kind of the energy in another episode. We're going to talk about lead and whatnot. And then the last thing is the food and drink quality. So our generation is more in tune. We talked about it in our restaurant episode, much more in tune with healthy eating. Yeah. So they're trying to upgrade basically what they offer and allow you to customize it a little bit more.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So I wanted to do one quick fun thing before we go. If you guys want to engage in this, a quick quiz to test your knowledge about amusement parks. Ready?
Yep.
You guys can battle it out, Jason and Michelle, and right. Listeners, let's see how well you do on this. At a staggering height of 456 feet, which is the world's tallest roller coaster?
Is it multiple choice?
Yes.
Oh, good.
So the Intimidator, 305 at King's Dominion, Superman Escape from Kryptonite at Six Flags, Kingda Ka at Six Flags Great Adventure, Leviathan in Canada's Wonderland.
Canada's too reserved. Can't be Canada.
I'm going with C.
C.
I thought it was Superman at one point, but that may
there's
be
There's no way.
Old.
Superman is... There's no way.
So the answer... Yes, you're right, Michelle. Kingda Ka.
That's right.
So, Michelle, you get 1 point.
What's the prize? What am I playing for?
Bragging rights.
Okay.
Formula Rosa, the world's fastest roller coaster, reaches which of these top speeds? 131 miles an hour, 135 miles an hour, 142 miles an hour, or 149?
142.
I think I mentioned this in the history, if you were listening.
Yeah, I want to say I remembered 142, but that might not be right.
I'm going with 135.
It was 149.
Dang it.
Wow.
I like that.
I think it was 4.5 seconds.
Yeah, it was something crazy. I was like, yeah. Dude.
All right. Opened in 1846, which is the oldest continually operating amusement park in the United States? Lake Compounce, Coney Island, Cedar Point, or Six Flags New England?
The easy one's to say Coney Island.
Coney Island.
That's what I would say, yeah.
Wrong.
Oh my gosh.
Dang it.
Lake Compounce.
Where is that?
Compounce.
Compounce.
Connecticut.
Connecticut.
Yeah.
Okay. Bristol,
Connecticut.
Who knew?
Which is the newest of the four theme parks at Walt Disney World in Orlando? Hollywood Studios, Animal Kingdom, Magic Kingdom, or Epcot?
Hollywood Studios.
Yeah, that would have been my guess.
Wrong.
What?
Animal Kingdom.
No way.
Opened in 1998.
No way. That's crazy. They need to do a better job at advertising Hollywood Studios, because I've never heard of it.
Which spot has been named the world's most beautiful amusement park for 26 consecutive years by the National Amusement Park Historical Association? Dollywood, Hershey Park, Disneyland, or Busch Gardens?
Dollywood.
Michelle?
Busch Gardens?
Busch Gardens is correct.
Dang, ah, man. Gardens, you know.
Yeah, no, it seemed too obvious to me.
All right. Home to more than 26 water parks, which city is known as the water park capital of the world? Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin. Orlando, Florida. Branson, Missouri. San Antonio, Texas.
Texas.
Orlando, but that seems obvious to me.
Wisconsin Dells. They have a ton of water parks there.
Who knew?
Which once closed amusement park now opens to visitors once a year? Diggerland, Rush Mountain Adventure Park, Land of Oz, or Wonderland?
Land of Oz.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
Correct.
Yes.
Land of Oz.
I'm on the board. Still losing, but I'm on the board.
Which late night host recently got his own ride at Universal Studios Florida? Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, Conan O'Brien, or Stephen Colbert?
Jeez.
Who's the redhead dude? What's his name again?
Conan.
Yeah, that guy. Let's go Conan.
Go with Stephen Colbert.
Okay.
I feel like he's a better known entity.
Both wrong. Jimmy Fallon.
Oh, that was my first gut reaction and I didn't go with it.
Always go with the gut. Always go with the gut.
Fallon opened in 2017 at Universal Studios Florida. The ride is described as the world's first ever flying theater. Last two questions. At the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, I got it right. Which number should you dial in the phone booth near King's Cross Station for a magical surprise? All the Harry Potter fans probably know this.
If you could see the way Jason and I are looking at each other right now, what kind of question is this?
Oh, man. So your options...
D.
is there E, all of the above?
So your options are 42779, Harry.
Is there an 8675309?
No. 62442, Magic. I guess these numbers correlate to these words. Let's go with
Harry. I'm gonna go with Magic.
I'll go with Harry. My last name's
Wiener. 92637 Wands, or 76273 Snape. That's a character.
I'm gonna go with Magic.
Jason, you're going Harry.
Yeah.
It's a wild guess.
Magic.
That's right, Jason. Take notes.
Last question.
Smoked, man.
Yeah, you did. So this is just for pride. Tower of Terror at Disney California Adventure will be replaced in 2017. You gotta know this.
It was replaced.
Was replaced with a new freefall ride based on which popular movie? Star Wars The Force Awakens, The Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy, or Finding Dory?
Guardians of the Galaxy, and such a disappointment because Terror of Tower was awesome.
Jason?
Well, Star Wars Land's coming, so I don't think it's that one. No, yeah, Star Wars Land.
Mm-mm.
No?
Gut.
Guardians of the Galaxy. Wow.
Bingo.
I didn't watch that movie either.
Bingo. You got and you say smashed. You and you say you go to Disneyland all the time.
Yeah,
whatever.
For the sourdough.
You got destroyed on this one, Jason.
Yeah.
So, I think, do you guys have anything else that you'd like to kind of bring up before
apparently
we close?
I need to shut up after that.
Before we close this out. All right. So, we will kind of wrap this up. And one quick thing for listener mail. Got a post on Instagram. Jason, you'll like this one. DM Renovations CLT said he's checked out the podcast. So there was a conversation on Instagram and this guy is talking to another guy and he said, I've checked out the Spaces podcast page and the podcast seems to be legit. I think everyone could value from their easy listening content. And then he wrangles in a couple other people to this conversation. And then he said, it makes you motivated.
There you go. I like that.
As F, I'll censor myself.
Hell yeah.
Spaces podcast, my friend would be a good guest on your show, blah, blah, blah.
That's cool.
So yeah, I didn't know we were motivating.
I don't know. We'll take it.
Yeah.
I like that.
And then one other comment that I got was a request to do fortresses.
Fortresses?
Yeah.
Like the ones I build with my kids out of pillows and blankets?
A little more substantial.
Okay.
And probably still standing. So,
how do you know?
So in the future, maybe we'll jump in and figure out a way to do the fortress episode. Let us know if you think that's a good idea. Let us know if you have any comments about what we talked about today. To do that, feel free to send us an email to hello@spacespodcast.com, or you can engage with us on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn, all Spaces Podcast. You should be able to find us pretty easily. So with all that said, thank you again for spending some time with us. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and like it. And forward a link to your friend. Your support is the only way that this show grows. And if you just stumbled upon the show, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss another episode. Also check out spacespodcast.com under the listen tab for photos, notes, and things that we talked about today. But before you go, next time on Spaces Podcast.
The Pearl is the tallest, most advanced building in the world.
You've built a vertical city, but you've brought with it every single safety and security challenge that I could think of.
We thought this floor was empty.
So did I.
Not only have you brought them all indoors, but you've trapped them 240 floors in the air. No one really knows what would happen if things go wrong.
For many years, historians of Chicago architecture felt that the home insurance building designed by William LeBaron Jenney from 1884 was the moment when all of the right technical innovations came together to result in a skyscraper.
And if you're catching up, hit next, or if you're listening to these as we put them out, we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thanks.